This is The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back to The Bullpen, second hour of the show. Del Olaleye here with Josh. I say Josh because I don't want to butcher your last name like people butcher mine. What? How would you like your last name pronounced?
So, do you want the long story or the short story?
Saturday. Give me the long one. I don't care.
Okay, so the long story is my last name has French origin.
Okay.
So, the proper French way to pronounce it is Chevanet, right? They spell it C-H-E-V-A-N-N-A-I-S, I believe. But coming from a family who is Jamaican, you know, through French settlers and, you know, colonizers and all that stuff, we kind of, throughout some generations, changed it to ES. And because Jamaicans aren't necessarily the best with pronunciation, we just started saying Chevans. So, like, Che and Vans, like the Vans out on the road, or like the Vans shoes brand.
Yeah.
And people still couldn't pronounce that, so that's where I got the name Chevy from.
Now, I understand shortening a name to not have to deal with it. Yeah. I've done that throughout my life. Yeah. So you would like to be called Josh
Chevans or Chevy, either one.
Chevans. Okay. Yeah. We'll go with Chevans. Josh Vance here with us, the producer for The Bullpen, as we get into hour two of the show. All of you, well, if you're listening to a show on Saturday, you probably have heard what happened earlier this week with James Harden and Daryl Morey. Well, Daryl Morey hadn't said anything other than telling James Harden, or at least the public, that he was taking him off the trade market because they couldn't find a deal that worked. Partly because James Harden only wants to be a Clipper, and we're seeing that play out less dramatically with Damian Lillard and the Miami Heat and the Portland Trailblazers. Damian Lillard hasn't come out publicly and called Joe Cronin a liar. I mean, some people speculate that's why he requested a trade to begin with, because Joe Cronin told him they would make moves to become a contender, trade that top pick, did not draft it, Scoot Henderson instead, and probably rightfully so. I doubt there was a deal in place that they would have accepted. So they keep, or at least accepted and felt good about it. So they drafted Scoot. Dame asked out. He has not done what James Harden did. He has not gone to a foreign country who has, let's just say, some issues with Daryl Morey, and tell the world through a kids' camp that Daryl Morey is a liar. Now, that was the story early, and the speculation began about, what does he mean, liar? Does he mean because he's not being traded? Does it mean because he was promised in a wink-wink deal, a long-term deal, when they could finally make it work money-wise, because he took less? You know the story. It took less to get P.J. Tucker and Daniel House there, because accumulating ex-Rockets who failed in Houston seems like a great idea in Philly, until it didn't. So Philly's in trouble. James Harden wants out. James calls Daryl Morey a liar. Now, the NBA has said, what do you mean by that? Now, Woj has a story out, and Woj, who has been, let's say, I won't say exposed, but some people have said this offseason that Woj is a plant, and they've said it before, he's a plant. Not an industry plant like we're talking about the music industry, but he's a plant for the owners, for the teams. He's a guy who they run stuff through to get their side of the story out, and he is not really getting his information from the players. That's more Shams. Shams is the guy who's getting stuff from the players. So is Chris Haynes. So you have to kind of figure out where these narratives are coming from and what you can and can't believe depending on who is saying it. So Woj puts out a story today. After he talks to people around the league, that the NBA is going to look into James Harden's statements. What do you mean when you say that Daryl Morey is a liar? Because if he's lying about not trading you, that's not something that, I won't say prosecuted, but that's not something the NBA will look into or say, okay, you did something wrong, Sixers, we're going to punish you. If it becomes that James is saying he lied because Daryl Morey promised him money in a wink-wink deal, and he's not getting his money, then the NBA steps in, the NBAPA steps in, it becomes a mess for the Sixers. They don't really have any first-round picks to take away currently. They're all in the future. Actually, they do. They just can't trade the ones they have because of, I think it's a Stepien rule, is that what it's called? But but maybe they get punished with first round picks taken away. Maybe it's a fine. So that is what the NBA will investigate. Well, just couching it as people around the league don't believe that's what James Harden meant when he said you're lying. I'm not sure if he hadn't talked to James Harden or his agent why he knows that to be the case, but the story on ESPN suggests that James Harden was talking about the Sixers or Daryl Morey lying about trading him, not about promising him money and then not giving it to him. One, a big deal. The other, not a big deal. So we'll see how that plays out. But I love that the Sixers are messy. I have never believed in that franchise. I don't mind trying to be bad to get good, but I don't like it being named. I don't like the process being celebrated and it becoming the storyline where the Sixers are smarter than everyone else. They're going to find a way to turn all these draft picks into a great team, and this is the way it had to be done. Well, when you draft the likes of Nerlens Noel, who else did they draft? Obviously, Ben Simmons is the one that is front and center. Markelle Fultz. There's one other big man they drafted that didn't work out. It's not Jabari Parker.
Jahlil Okafor.
The other, it's another Duke player, Jahlil Okafor.
Who was the point guard? By the way,
Michael Carter Williams.
Michael Carter.
He's the guy they dumped along with the likes of Drew Holiday because they didn't believe it was good enough when they were a fringe playoff team making the playoffs, not really doing anything. So they decided, you know what? They were the equivalent of going before it changed to 17 games in the NFL regular season. They were like going 7-9, 8-8 every year, maybe 9-8, and going, that's not good enough. So we're gonna dump everything. We're gonna get really bad and bad for a long time. Keep taking swings, and then eventually it'll work out for them. It's been a decade of this now, and they haven't advanced past the second round. And the crown jewel of the process is one, I don't know, upset stomach away from asking out. We're one Joel Embiid change of heart from this all coming crumbling down. And you know who's going to get blamed for it most of all? Daryl Morey, because he brought in James Harden. He's been attached at the hip to him for forever. You know, he credits James Harden with his career, and he rightfully so, because what would Daryl Morey be without the acquisition of James Harden and their time in Houston? But he tried it one more time. He didn't learn from, after he took off, he didn't learn from how James exited Houston, how James Harden exited Brooklyn. He wanted one more opportunity, and now he's the one who's going to deal with the fallout. And Kevin McHale people ran and got Kevin McHale this week, and Kevin McHale was like, Daryl Morey brought this upon himself because he enabled James, and now he's dealing with the consequences of all that enabling. So I like it being messy in Philly. I've never respected them. Joel Embiid's a great player. I just don't like my best players being question marks about whether they can play in playoff games. And he tried. He came back early in this run, but there's always something. I mean, I can't really blame him for Siakam breaking his face in the playoffs a couple seasons ago. I'll blame Doc Rivers for playing him in a game they're up by nearly 30 and then him getting his face broken and it affecting their second round series against the Heat. But it's just a roster full of guys, well, particularly their top two guys who you can't trust. And James Harden and Joel Embiid and Doc Rivers and Daryl Morey all came together to create a bleep show sandwich that I enjoyed from afar. And we'll see how it plays out. But that franchise is one Joel Embiid request from cratering. And I kind of want it to happen because who likes a Philly fan? Who does? I haven't met one person who wraps their identity around Philly sports that I like. There are people who are Philly fans that I like, but someone who, you know, would put Philly in their profile, would go Sixers Nation or whatever it's called, the hashtag Sixers or whatever you're doing, or whether it be go fly Eagles fly. If you have said that out loud, I can promise I don't like you, even if I've never met you. Like, you could be an Eagles fan. Like, I'm a Dolphins fan. I've never said fins up. It's not my personality. But if you have, okay, whatever. Dolphins fans aren't Eagles fans. If you're like, what's the Texans slogan this year? Do they have one? For the H? Is that theirs? I think that's been co-opted a couple times by different franchises. I'm not sure what the Texans. I'm sure it's on their Twitter. I'm sure if you said that, you're a great person, whatever it might be. But I can't imagine anyone saying fly, Eagles, fly, and being a person I want to hang out with.
We are Texans.
Okay, it's as boring as they always are. But that's great for them. And maybe with the uniform change next year, they'll get people who create better slogans for them. But or better hashtags. But fly, Eagles, fly. If you've ever said it, you can't be that great of a person. You can't. And like Denzel Mims said, no, I didn't like that dirty-ass, trash-ass city. It's my favorite thing. It's my favorite thing any player who's never accomplished anything has ever said. He hadn't even played it. He hadn't ever taken a snap in an NFL preseason game, and they asked him about Philly, and he said, no, I didn't like that dirty-ass, trash-ass city. And I think he's now traded to Detroit and cut now. He was a Jet, didn't do much, and then I think the Lions acquired him, and I think he's now been cut. So hadn't gone great for Denzel Mims as an NFL player, but he did say one thing right, that dirty-ass, trash-ass city. One other story surrounding that, Vincent Goodwill of Yahoo Sports, not the dirty-ass, trash-ass city thing, but Vincent Goodwill of Yahoo talks about what Daryl Morey might actually want out of this. He is speculating that Daryl Morey might actually want a rebuild. I was under the impression that if it came to that, where Joel Embiid asked out, Daryl Morey was getting fired. But could he maneuver it where he – it's like when you draft a young quarterback up, give me a couple of years. I drafted a rookie quarterback. We got to see how he plays out. Is there a way that the guy who created this mess can go, you know what, we need to start over? When the whole thing was about starting over and Joel Embiid was the byproduct of starting over, can you start over again and keep your job? I don't see it, but that's the speculation that he might, or at least one man's speculation, that he might want a redo. Imagine Daryl Morey with draft picks and trying to build a roster up.
You know somewhere Ben Simmons is attentively watching.
Well, we know that Ben Simmons is paying attention because when they were getting their doors blown off in Game 7 against the Celtics, he put out an Instagram story of him watching the game.
Drinking a little wine.
In his palatial estate. In the background, you saw the TV and the game. So we know he's paying attention. If it becomes a thing where Doc is gone, Daryl Morey goes, and Joel goes, in the aftermath of them ditching him because of what they said about him and what it turned into for him, you know he's going to enjoy it. And Ben Simmons is the king, although Jalen Green has come really racing up the charts you don't want to see him. He's of those posts, those Twitter posts in the offseason where a guy looks great. He's in his bag. He's working out. He feels the strongest he's ever been. Those are the quotes about Ben Simmons. But Jalen Green working out with KD, adding stuff to his game. Rockets Twitter's like, oh, the comeback's going to be, you know, all the things they say about. What's the one line I remember? We hope the apologies are as loud as the
disrespect.
The disrespect.
Yeah.
It's in that vein for Jalen Green because of what he looks like in shorts and a non-Rockets T-shirt when he's playing against other guys. So we'll see what Jalen Green becomes. He is part of the aftermath of the Daryl Morey James Harden split from Houston. The Rockets got bad. He was one of those picks, and the Rockets hope that maybe they don't name it the process, but they hope that after they decided they had to blow it up or they were forced to blow it up, the byproduct of it goes a lot better than it's gone in Philly as they're one step away from that whole thing coming down on their heads, which I think the rest of the NBA would enjoy quite a bit. We'll see how it plays out. We got a couple more segments to go. I want to talk about how you don't test if someone on your team is a virgin or not, because Takeo Spikes, formerly of the Florida Gators, had an interesting way of trying to find out if Tim Tebow was one. It was improper. We'll talk about that on the other side. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. Oh, it's you people.
What do you mean, you people?
What do you mean, you people?
Huh?
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside the bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait, who let those guys up here?
Security.
That's them right there. Right there.
I've got a key card, so security can't stop me, and I think Josh has one too. It's the only way to get up here, actually. Sorry to debunk that myth, but key cards allow us access, and there's really no security here. I mean, there are points in this station's history where the doors didn't. The doors locked, but they weren't locked. So if you happen, it that's changed now. You have to have the pass. It's like a key, a pass to get in. So you have to type in a number and you get in. But there are times where, hey, I know there's a lot of radio equipment up here, but you can just walk around. If you happen to be on the fourth floor, you can open the door and walk in. That's no longer the case.
Have you seen the security sometimes when you leave the building? I know I usually, whenever I work, like late hits with PC or I have anything.
It's usually
like
at night.
Usually at night.
You don't see them walking around during the day. At least I don't. When I get here in the morning or when I leave in early afternoon, I don't see them.
And I will say this. The security, no offense, but I'm not sure what you're securing.
No. Yeah, well, that's kind of the case in a lot of places. But here, you know what it is. Hey, just be where you're supposed to be. Be a presence. But if anything really went down, just call the police because they're not equipped. And honestly, I don't know how much this building is paying for security, but would it really even be worth it to step in? And hell, I mean, if you had to take down, I'm sure they could take down Patrick Creighton if they needed to, but I'm just not sure. I'm not sure if there was actually a real assailant, if they were going to be equipped or if they're getting paid enough to do it. So,
what if Andrew Carlson had a bad day?
Yeah, Andrew's a fit dude. And I've seen the security who generally traipse around this building. It wouldn't go well for them now. And I think there's only one of them on at a time. So Andrew could probably handing himself. I got a text. Stop giving out security information. I'm giving out old security information. The new information states you can't get in here. The old information would tell you walk on in. That's why I never gave it out before. Now there's a code. I don't want to text this person my answer, but they're listening. So I'm just going to tell you right now. I'm only giving it out now because you have to have you have to be able to type in a pass to get in. You didn't have to do that before. I know what I'm doing. That's fine.
Heck, you can't even use the elevator right above.
Yeah,
no.
That's the other thing. You can't even get up here without a key card. You can't even get on the floor. We're secure enough. And to be honest, no one's driving up here to do anything. Hey, they know the address. I mean, sure, it's publicly stated, but what are you coming up here for? There's nothing of value. You want to take an audio board that's been around since the inception of the station? Go ahead. Go right ahead.
Matter of fact, some people might encourage it.
Yeah. I mean, some people around here would say it would be the final excuse to actually go get a new one. So if you want to dig around the rat's nest that is the control room, go right ahead. If you want to, there's a Dell computer in here from 20 years ago. You think I'm exaggerating? I believe maybe the monitors have been changed. At one point, some of the towers had been around for 15 years or so. So, there's not a lot. The only thing of value in here are me and Josh, and we would fight you. That's all I'm going to say. But moving on, I don't know if Josh remembers or even paid attention to the Florida Gators in the you probably remember them, but I don't know how much they bothered you. I was a Miami Hurricane fan, so I was bothered by the Gators the entire time they were good under Tim Tebow. But there's a story out surrounding that team because the new doc is going to come out next week. I think it's the 23rd. It's following up the Johnny Manziel Untold. Was it Jake or Logan Paul Untold? Was it one of the Paul brothers Untold? Either way, the one that was big for us, at least the bench, was the Manziel Untold. Well, the Florida Gators and that Urban Meyer era Florida Gators team is going to have one as well on Netflix called Untold Swamp Kings. It's going to be released on the 23rd of August. And Takeo Spikes, he played at Auburn. I said Takeo Spikes earlier. Brandon Spikes, a big middle linebacker for the University of Florida, was on that team, was a captain. He was probably the not the opposite, but if you're looking for a leader of that defense, it was him. And if you're looking for a leader of that offense, it was Tim Tebow. So They were the two leaders of that team. If you know that team, you know Aaron Hernandez was on it, Jeff Demps, Chris Rainey, Percy Harvin. Not the greatest guys in the world were on that team. And it might have been the reason Charlie Strong developed his five pillars, the thing that people make fun of when he went to Texas. Charlie Strong, it's been years now, but a really successful coach at Louisville. We forget about that because of what happened at Texas and then after things not going well for him at USF as well. But at one point, a hot name and a good coach and head coach in college football. But that team was a mess. as far as off the field. On the field, they got it done. So not a lot of that stuff was talked about. But that documentary will kind of showcase the on the field and the off the field stuff, and Tim Tebow being the center of something that he probably didn't expect when he signed on the dotted line from Venice, Florida. The fact that he would join a roster of, let's just say, renegades. We'll call him that. But in this story that Brandon Spikes told the New York Post, he wanted to see if Tim Tebow was a virgin, really a virgin. That was another story surrounding Tim Tebow. Him being a devout Christian, him believing no sex before marriage. It was a storyline. Tom Brenneman at one point said, if you spend 5 minutes in a room with Tim Tebow, you'll become a better person. He said that on a broadcast, by the way. He said that, I don't know which game it was, but he said it on the broadcast, and I still haven't forgotten it to this day. And honestly, it's not even the most memorable thing Tom Brenneman is known for, because isn't he the guy who got in trouble on air for saying something? I gotta remember that story, but he's had some moments on the air, and I think he was on a Cincinnati Reds broadcast and said something he shouldn't have said, and now he's no longer on the broadcast. But he said that at one point, being in the room with Tim Tebow makes you a better person. So that was the aura around Tim Tebow, and Brandon Spikes wanted to test it. I just wanted to see if he was real. So I would like, you know, maybe have a nude picture on my phone or something and show it to him just to see how he would react. If he was Xavier Howard, he'd get sued for that. If you missed that story, that's the thing that happened on Friday. He was like, come on, man. Like, you really get a man uncomfortable. And I was like, oh, he's serious. That is not how you test if a man is a virgin or not. What happened to the days when you'd send a girl to the guy's room and see if he rejects her? It's easy to say, get that picture out of my face. I wasn't doing the whole I'm a virgin thing. And I don't really want you to show me a naked picture of someone. It's just, I feel like that's a little weird. I don't know why. Maybe
especially if we don't have a relationship like that.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, they're teammates, but even still, don't send me. I'm assuming this was a picture of a woman that Brandon Spikes might have known personally. I don't know if he pulled up a porn picture. I'm not sure. But I don't think, like, I work with a lot of dudes, mostly dudes at the station. I don't want any of them showing me naked pictures of some woman that I don't know. It's weird. Don't do it. So I would get why Tim Tebow's uncomfortable by it, but it's a terrible test. You don't show him a picture. And even the woman to the door is aggressive. But if we're really testing the quote-unquote virginity of Tim Tebow, you use an actual live woman to see if he rejects her. And knowing what I know about just the human condition, if Tim Tebow is what he says he is and he appears to be, sending a woman to his door is not going to work either. It's got to be someone he forms a relationship with, and then eventually it leads to that. So either way, I don't know if there's a real test. I think Brandon Spikes took the easy way out, and it's a poor option. But I'm not sure testing the devout Christian with woman to the door or picture on the phone is the way to go about it. Like, if Tim Tebow, if you're trying to test, let's say, his – what's the word I'm looking for? If you're trying to test his commitment to a relationship, but you know he's not the devout Christian virgin, then you send a woman to the door. But there's no way to get it done in a reasonable fashion unless you're in for the long con.
If Brandon thinks that's a test, thank God he didn't decide to be a teacher in life. Yeah. Or a professor.
Yeah, it's everyone. The curve would be non-existent. Everyone would get A's, and then he'd have to answer questions about why no one in his class has anything below a B+. It's a poor test. We'll see if the documentary provides more entertainment. It should be. It's one. I didn't really care that much about the Manziel one. I eventually watched it because so many people around me were talking about it. I'm gonna watch the Gators one. I always knew they were bad people. As a Miami fan, I always knew all that winning had to come with a cost, and that has played out over the last 15 years or so. And we'll get to see more of that on Netflix starting August 23rd. So I'm interested to see what gets covered, what doesn't, who gets interviewed, even, because in the Johnny Manziel one, no former teammates were interviewed. We'll see how many Gators decide. We know we're going to hear from probably Andy Staples, who works for The Athletic. I think he might even have. I don't know if he was on that team, but I know he covered Florida football. So he might, I imagine they'll go to him. But will we hear from the likes of Brandon Spikes or other guys on that team? Was Janoris Jenkins on that team? There's a lot he might be a little young for that, but Riley Cooper, I feel like he's unlikely. I feel like he, considering his past, he might not make an appearance. Although he was one of Tim Tebow's guys at one point, so there's a lot to be interested in that doc. I just hope I hear from some former players.
I hope Cam Newton shows up.
Yeah, he was a guy who was on that roster until he got caught with the laptop, and now he went on to go to Auburn and, you know, have all the success he's had in his college career and pro career. I wonder if they will. I'm sure Cam would want to talk. I'm just not sure if they'll get to him. But I just want to hear from former players. That would be good. Just to add a little bit more than what the Johnny Manziel doc added. Josh tells me we got to go to break. So we're going to go to break. We got a couple more segments to go here on the bullpen. I do want to get to some NFL news. I mentioned earlier in the show how the campaign for Will Levis, or at least Jeremy Branham's campaign for Will Levis, took another hit. We'll get into that. We want to talk a little bit about the Bijan hype, because everyone loves Bijan Robinson. He's had a great offseason. If you go by Twitter, all the clips of him smoking some outmatched linebacker in one-on-ones. We know how unfair that is to the offense, but he's taking advantage. He had one carry against, at least last night, and against the Bengals. It was spectacular, and people jumped all over it. So Bijan Robinson, we'll talk a little bit about him, and we'll get more into the Texans as we get closer. I'll try to find out the Dolphins are actually going to play anyone to challenge the Texans. We'll see about that and more here on the Bullpen. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're hooked up with it.
You hooked up with it. You decided to marry it. I told you I wasn't into it. You said it didn't matter.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
We're back on The Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Josh and Dell here. A couple more segments to go. Couple NFL things I wanted to get to. Some scary news out of Southern California, and that's besides the hurricane barreling down on that area. I was having a discussion with someone about it because I am from Southern California, and earthquakes are always what we are worried about. A hurricane, never. I'm not going to get into the climate change discussion, but when I was a kid, the thought of, and I have family in Florida, so we would always look out and go, hope everyone's okay, because it's just not something we have to worry about. Now the people in Southern California do. So hopefully, if it's going to hit directly, it doesn't do as much damage as predicted, because a Cat 4 is a problem and scary. But another thing that happened in the area, Southern California, Jimmy Graham is a tight end for the Saints. He signed a deal with them this offseason, and he was arrested on suspicion of being under the influence. Now, the story coming out after that is that he was suffering from a medical episode. That's what the Saints tight end Jimmy Graham experienced, a medical episode last evening, which resulted in him becoming disoriented. This is a statement from the team today. He was taken into custody by local authorities and transported to a local hospital for evaluation for what Dr. John Amos believes to be a likely seizure, and spent the night under medical supervision and testing. He was released this morning, and it's with the team as they continue preparation for Sunday's game against the Chargers. So what appeared to be an arrest actually gets scary for Jimmy Graham. Having a seizure is really scary. I mean, Jimmy Graham, he's an older player, but still in peak physical condition. For that to happen to him, it just speaks to how no one is immune to something unexpected happening. So hopefully Jimmy Graham is okay. And just wandering around is a scary thing too, that he wasn't somewhere safe. It just happened to appear like he was under some type of substance, but according to the doctors, it was a likely seizure. So he's out of the hospital, which is good. Hopefully Jimmy Graham continues to improve. Some other things to discuss NFL-wise, in a less dramatic story, Bijan Robinson last night didn't play in game one against the Dolphins, did play in game two against the Bengals. Had one really good run, and it lit Twitter afire. Everyone's like, see, this is what I'm talking about. Now, Bijan Robinson is in an interesting time for running backs. He's a rookie, so people are really excited about him. He is a player people think can be a big impact. He was a top 10 pick, which is something some people don't think running back should be. But he's also going to be a guy, if he's really great in 4 years, people say don't pay. So that's just the dichotomy of we can marvel at his physical ability, but if he lives up to the hype people are throwing on him, the same people are going to go, well, don't pay him. Don't pay him, because you know that's the second deal for running backs not going to work out. I don't know if the game will have changed by then. I doubt it. But I just love all the accounts talking about how great he is, and then it'll be the same people saying, nah, not good enough. Pay a wide receiver that money, pay a quarterback that money, pay a tackle that money, but not that really, really good football player. Hopefully Bijan Robinson's good enough where that doesn't become a factor, and we're really early in his NFL career. But people seem to think he's the one. He's the next one, at least, as far as the great running backs in this league. I'm trying to think, who was the last one? Who was the last great running back that we expected and it came to fruition?
I guess it would kind of be Saquon, would it not be?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a guy who was, because they don't get drafted in the first round anymore. Not high, not like Saquon was. It would have to be him. It would have to be Saquon. The last, because he was drafted after Zeke. Zeke's been around a long time now. Now he's a Patriot. Yeah, I think you're right. I think Saquon was the last great running back we thought really highly of. He goes high. When he's not hurt, he's a really good football player. Just not good enough for the Giants to give him a long-term deal because he's a running back.
And they'll pay. Let's pay Daniel Jones instead.
Yeah.
With his 15 touchdowns in a season or whatever the number
was. Yeah, they got – the Giants didn't expect – look, Giants management can tell you one thing, but they didn't expect to be really good because Daniel Jones is their quarterback. And when Daniel Jones is your quarterback, you don't expect to make the playoffs. And three teams in the NFC East did make the playoffs. So Daniel Jones leads you to the I'm just not going to use it. He didn't lead them to the playoffs. He was competent, and their running game and all these factors contributed to them. But Daniel Jones being the quarterback sure had played a part. But I think you could have plugged in. You could have plugged in Derek Carr, and then make the playoffs.
You could have plugged in Jared Goff.
Well, definitely Jared Goff. Jared Goff played better than Daniel Jones did last year. So definitely, I'm trying to think of the starting quarterbacks last year who you couldn't have put there. Not Russell Wilson. He was terrible. But Geno Smith made the playoffs, so he certainly would have been in the mix. I guess the point is you could have slid in a number of guys we don't think that highly of, and they would have made the playoffs.
Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins made the – and they beat Kirk Cousins in a playoff game, so definitely they could have slid in Kirk Cousins. So Daniel Jones was fine. He was just fine. But because he exceeded expectations and the Giants weren't in a position to draft the quarterback, or maybe they didn't think much of the quarterbacks in this draft to trade up and go get one, they had to pay him. And now they're paying him upwards of 40-plus, and Saquon is saying, what about me? And Bijan Robinson, I don't think Desmond Ridder 3 years from now is going to be that. But if it came down to it, they would pay Desmond Ridder before they pay Bijan.
If I'm Bijan, I'm calling two people, Christian McCaffrey and Deebo. Be like, hey, give me some of your offseason workouts so I can make sure that my route running is A1, so I'm splitting the ball 50-50 behind the line and on the side.
Yeah, become a weapon, not a running back. Christian McCaffrey, who has been injured, but the 49ers gave up quite a bit to get him. And you know, Deebo got his money too. Has he gotten his money?
Deebo got paid.
Okay, Deebo did get his money.
Deebo got paid.
I was trying to remember if they eventually got that deal done. And they got him his money, partly because of what he is as a running back and a receiver. But even Deebo fought that designation because he knew running backs don't get paid. He wanted, hey, treat me like a wide receiver. Even though a lot of his value with what the 49ers want to do is what they do with him out of the backfield. But he got his money, and if I'm Bijan, I would like to be designated all purpose or weapon.
Yep. Debo's contract is 3-year, $71 million, $24 million signing bonus, $58 million guaranteed.
Okay. So, and that's receiver money, not running back money. So if I'm all those clips of Bijan being split out as a receiver in camp, hey, can I get more of that as a reality in game. So people look at me as a souped up better version of Cordero Patterson. I mean, maybe I'm not returning kicks, but I can be a receiver. I can be a running back. Get me in that yards after catch stuff, because I want to be someone 3 or 4 years from now. We're not having discussions about, do we franchise him? Do we give him a long-term deal? Because when you're great, like T. Higgins might leave Cincinnati because they got to pay. They're going to pay Joe Burrow. They're going to pay Ja'Marr Chase. But it ain't because he ain't worth it or no other teams think of him as being worth it. He's a wide receiver. Even the second wide receiver gets paid more than running backs do. So, I mean, Bijan, I mean, it's too late now to switch positions. That's a discussion you have when you're 12, when you go play corner or something, or be a Debo type at wide receiver. But him, he's the next one, and he'll be the next one they say you shouldn't pay, because second contracts for running backs never work out unless you're Derrick Henry. He's been the outlier. And unfortunately for the Texans, he's in their division.
Even Derrick Henry had to fight, though.
He had to fight. It was a fight, but he got his money, and he's still performing. So he would be the one you point to and go, and then everyone would point to, well, he's as big as a defensive end, so he doesn't really count either. So there is always going to be a fight. It just appears to be something running backs will never win. Austin Eckler suffered it this offseason. He's a guy who turns five-yard Justin Herbert passes into first downs and touchdowns, and so, too bad you're not the quarterback. We're going to pay Justin, and you have to get the scraps. And I say scraps jokingly, because whatever Austin Eckler got is still quite a bit of money. It just isn't what the best players in the league get, because he plays a position that's not valued. We got one more segment to go here on the Bullpen. Dell and Josh here with you. We'll wrap it up, talk about what the Astros are going to see tonight. We'll talk more about the Texans as they get ready for their game against the Dolphins. Big sports day for the city of Houston. You got football and your baseball team in a big series against the Mariners, who are hard charging. One more segment to go here in the Bullpen. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.com on the Chase Long.
I've got a Chase Long in my dressing room and a pack of warm beer that we can consume.
This is the Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Final segment of today's edition of the Bullpen. Tomorrow it'll be Sean Mapes, Josh, and Andrew Carlson from 10 to 12.
Actually, I'm not on tomorrow.
Oh, you're not on? Is it Brian?
Brian is on tomorrow, I believe, but I'm running Houston Dynamo, and that's the reason why I'm not on the morning show.
Okay. Some other logistical things. I mentioned earlier in the show that this is the last edition of me being on the Saturday show. Joe won't be on it either. It'll be Mapes, Carlson, and Josh when he's not running other things. He's a multi-purpose here at the station. Also, it's the last Saturday of the year without college football. I was surprised too, Josh. Next week, you've got Notre Dame versus Navy in Ireland, I believe. So we've got major college footballs next Saturday. So it's here. We got camps, obviously in full effect, final scrimmages to determine depth charts, quarterback battles need to be figured out. But Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman against Navy in Ireland next Saturday. So we're already there. So all the talk about the long offseason, particularly for a college football fan, it's over. I mean, should have been over as soon as camps opened up, because the news comes and you get to see players in uniforms and all that stuff. But actual games to watch for the rest of us begin next Saturday. And it's not the only one. You've got top 10 USC versus San Jose State, Florida and Utah. That's a little bit later on the 31st, but you've got games on next Saturday. So while this show is going on, Josh, you're going to be doing the show, and Navy Notre Dame will be on NBC already. You'll start the show a little bit earlier than that, but as the show's coming to an end, Navy and Notre Dame here locally, as far as when it's on, 1:30, so on NBC. So here we are. If you love college football, you're not that far away from spending your Saturdays watching the sports you love. The Texans play the Dolphins in about an hour and a half or so. We also have the Astros against the Mariners a little bit later tonight. And the Astros, coming off a loss last night, tried to even the series. You got Fromber on the mound. They'll see Logan Gilbert. Logan Gilbert is 7-1 on the road this season. And last time he faced the Astros was on the road. It was here at Minute Maid. He and the Mariners won that game 3-1. He goes 7 innings, gave up a run. Of all the people, he gave up a home run to Maldonado. That's the only run he gave up in that one as the Mariners took that game 3-1. Hopefully not a repeat where the Astros continue to not hit Rangers pitchers. I keep saying the Rangers because I guess they're in my brain because they're in first place. Hopefully it doesn't continue where the Astros don't hit Mariners pitching. Got that right finally. The Mariners, particularly Gilbert last time, and you had Miller last night, have handled the Astros pretty well this season. Hope there needs to be a change there, or the Astros continue to lose ground in the wild card race and the division race. So, Fromber on the mound didn't pitch well after his no-hitter. He needs to be better, and so does the rest of that Astros lineup, and we'll see what Dusty runs out there because it's a topic of conversation every day. We know Jeremy Ranum revels in what's wrong with Dusty's lineup in his quote tweet when the Astros put out the official lineup. We'll see what Dusty does. Are you happy with it? Are you not? And Josh asked me a question during a break. We know Michael Brantley's in Sugarland, homered in his first game, continues to work there. So we're not that far away from Michael Brantley coming back. Where does Michael Brantley wind up in this lineup when he's back? You think about this lineup, got two really good lefties in Yordan and Kyle Tucker. John Singleton is in the lineup because of Abreu's injury, not classified as a really good lefty unless we're talking about one Friday in early August. If we have Yiner, let's say we talk about the Astros' strongest lineup, and not necessarily where they're batting, but the strongest lineup. You've got Altuve, Bregman, Yordan, Kyle Tucker. Pena will play shortstop. He's not hitting well, but who else are you going to put there? You've got Chaz, and is Brantley the seventh hitter in this lineup? Because let's say Yiner is playing first, and Yordan goes to left, and you're making Brantley the DH, and you're catching Maldonado, which automatically makes it not the strongest lineup. But let's say it's Justin Verlander in a game one, so. Yiner's on the mound. Maldonado's behind the plate and Verlander's on the mound. Are we talking Brantley as the seventh guy?
I think that sounds about right.
When I think about it, your three outfielders were hit ahead of him. Your third baseman would, your second baseman would, your first baseman would. In that lineup, he's eighth. Unless maybe you're hitting him ahead of Pena. Maybe he's seventh, Pena's eighth. And if we're talking about the strongest lineup,
he has to be ahead of Pena right now. I'm sorry. I know like everyone has the high expectations and high hopes for Jeremy when the playoffs start, but man, I don't know. He has to be ahead of him right now, at least.
The way he's hit this year, you go Altuve, Bregman, some common, and I'm not doing the whole lefty righty thing. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, Tucker, Alvarez, Diaz. Who else am I missing? Yeah, I think you're right. He's hitting ahead of Pena. And if Jeremy Pena is your eight hole hitter, that's a pretty good lineup. It's a pretty good lineup. So, and not that we'll ever see the strongest lineup that we can imagine. It all depends on who's on the mound and who Dusty feels should be out there, as opposed to what the numbers might say. But in a lineup with Maldonado as catcher and Yiner as your first baseman, you're sending Yordan to left and Brantley as your DH, and Chaz is, I keep forgetting Chaz. That's the other one. I forgot to throw Chaz in there. So Chaz is your six hole hitter behind Yiner in terms of strength of. Or you can flip flop. Either way, I don't care about what those two. They're five and six, and then you have Brantley, Pena, and Maldonado, 1 through 9. If you're trying to get your strongest lineup, that includes Maldonado because Verlander's on the mound. So we always have to offer that caveat. If Verlander or whoever really wants to pitch Maldonado / Dusty's questionable decision making when Maldonado's in, all these things you have to strongest lineup including all those things because Maldonado has to play. There it is. But to answer your question, I think he's seventh. and Pena would have to be eighth if we're talking about the best hitters in order or something along those lines. So that's a great lineup. Doesn't guarantee you anything, but if that lineup is what we might see in a game one, I feel pretty good about the Astros' chances. Hopefully that game one is part of a divisional round series. Hopefully, or at least because you won your division, excuse me, not because you're in a wild card series because you can't catch the Rangers. And I know John thinks at one point thought that was going to be a 6-game division win for the Astros. I questioned it when he said it, and I continue to question it because unless you're going to, you don't have enough games against the Rangers to just, if you smack them around and sweep them, there's still not enough games, I think, to make up that type of difference. But winning by 6 or by 1 really only matters to be ahead. So we'll see what the Astros can do the rest of the way. That, hopefully, a run starts tonight. Fromber on the mound against Logan Gilbert. Hey, let's hit the baseball. That might help. No matter what Fromber looks like, if you don't hit the baseball like you didn't hit the baseball last night, it's not going to matter. The bullpen wraps up. I want to thank Josh for being the producer. I respect the Tyreek Hill shirt.
Which was bought in Miami, for the record.
Understood. I visited Florida, and my family bought me a hat and a shirt. Not a Tyreek Hill-specific shirt, but a Dolphin shirt that I have not worn just because it's in a closet someplace. But that'll wrap up the bullpen for today. Tomorrow, you'll have Andrew, Brian, and Sean to do their final Sunday show, it looks like. And then they'll be here in this spot next Saturday. Enjoy your weekend. Hopefully you get what you want out of the Texas game. I'm not saying hopefully they win because it doesn't really matter. Hopefully you get out of what you want. CJ Stroud plays well. Tank Dell keeps playing well. And then you see the Astros take out the Mariners and get back on track. I am Del Olaleye. That's Josh Chavans. We'll talk to you when we talk to you.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're hooked up with it.
Toss a coin to your Witcher.